Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Tariq Ali is a world-renowned political commentator, writer and activist. We sent Tom Watts to catch up with him while he was in Auckland.
Hello, Tariq. What brings you to New Zealand?
Well, I was asked to give the Douglas Robb lectures 2 years ago by the University of Auckland. And I accepted the invitation. And that was that. I mean, and I honoured it, even though I was under very heavy pressure to go to Egypt and Tunisia and all these exciting places. But I had to go to do a gig at the Perth Writers Festival in Australia, and then I thought I'd do both together. So it worked out quite well.
Fantastic. When you're travelling and speaking, who do you tend to find yourself talking to? I mean, do you tend to be preaching to the converted, or how does it tend to work?
No. Usually, lots of people from different walks of life and holding different political opinions come to my talks, and they're lively questions afterwards. At my first talk in Auckland, there was a slightly excited gent who was shaking his head vigorously to show that he disagreed with me and making notes as if he was once an employee of the intelligence services. But I was hoping that he would get up and ask a question, since he was so... But he never did. But anyway, so lots of different people come.
He's probably a blogger, and he's going to rebut all of your points.
Yeah, he didn't look like a blogger, actually. Somehow he didn't give that impression. He looked... I can't describe him now, but never mind.
Now, as somebody who's been very critical of the whole, Western neoliberal free market kind of approach to governance and those kind of things, you must be watching what's going on in the Arab world at the moment with a certain level of interest as the Western-backed dictators kind of get gradually overthrown.
Yeah, it's been, some of them have been toppled, others are still in place. But the movement that has swept the Arab world is in itself very exciting, and I compare it in my essays to 1848 in Europe, where regimes toppled, where barricades went up on the streets, and where the whole of Europe was affected by these uprisings. And that is what the Arab uprisings remind me of. I'm not sure they will all be successful, but I think that if Egypt makes it and becomes a constitutional republic, that will have a big, big impact on the region. And I think ultimately the goal has to be to get rid of the Saudi Arabian royal family, who have sat over that country like, a monster, and backed first by the Brits and later by the United States. And currently sending troops in Bahrain to help their cousins who rule that country. So I think once that regime falls, the Middle East will never be the same.
We'll talk about Egypt, then we'll talk about Saudi Arabia. One of the things that certainly came through the American news media was that there was a big fear of the Muslim Brotherhood, in inverted commas, in hushed tones, the Muslim Brotherhood will take over. Is there actually any reason to be frightened of them?
No, none at all. The regime in Saudi Arabia is, I would say, 1,000 times worse than any Muslim Brotherhood. And the Americans live with it, tolerate it, sustain it. So essentially, they were extremely upset by the fact that this movement arose and toppled Mubarak, who was their favorite in the Middle East for many years, many decades. And so they were putting out all sorts of propaganda. The Muslim Brotherhood is, in my opinion, no different from the people ruling Indonesia today, or Turkey. It's a conservative, socially, politically a conservative party like the Christian Democrat Party is in Western Europe. And I don't think that they will, they'll be only too happy to work with the United States. I'm not in favor of this particular organization, but to build it into a bogey is utterly ridiculous.
I mean, with Saudi Arabia, do you think that the Americans would actually get properly involved with defending Saudi Arabia?
I think if there was an uprising in Saudi Arabia, the Americans would make sure the royal family is kept in power. My own opinion is that Obama, Clinton would back the Saudis to kill.
So in that situation, they would actually go to war to protect a...
They wouldn't go to war. They would make sure that the Saudi army was well-armed in order to defeat an uprising.
Is there anything that surprised you about the speed? I mean, were you expecting this?
No one was expecting it, neither me nor anyone else. the speed with which the movement spread from Tunisia to Egypt and then to the rest of the Arab world took the whole world by surprise. It was amazing. It was a sign that history had not lost any of its originality, that the people were still capable of changing and making history and were the masters and mistresses of their own fate. And that was a very, very exciting thing to have happened at this particular point in the 21st century.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're watching history being written, or being made at this point in time. How do you feel about the how the news media has done at actually writing a first draft of history?
It varies. I mean, you know, some coverage has been reasonable, some has been appalling. The BBC, for a long time during the Egyptian uprising, was clearly under government instructions not to show too much. They had Mubarak apologists on the screen most of the time. The big breakthrough came from the Arab television network, Al Jazeera, and that was the network which essentially recorded the history. The coverage in the American networks and Britain in particular was not good. Once Mubarak had gone, then they loosened up. But, you know, by that time, it was a fait accompli anyway.
Speaking of kind of vested interests, your most recent book, The Obama Syndrome, kind of looks or offers further insight into the American political system. For those that haven't heard of the book, I mean, how would you pitch it to them? Why is it an important book?
Well, I would say it's a book that is critical of Obama and argues a case which liberals in the United States don't like to hear, but they cannot answer, which is that the continuities between the Bush and Obama administrations are startling and very strong on every level, both at home and abroad. And even the woman he's appointed to the Supreme Court, Obama, is a very conservative lady, in my opinion, and defends torture, etc. So it's been a huge disappointment. And after the build-up of so many hopes, people are very angry, some are disillusioned. But there is a layer within the United States of hardcore liberals who can't bring themselves to accept this. So they cling to straws. Oh, but he's trying. Oh, but he's well-meaning. Oh, but he can't. And my book cuts through all that and just analyzes, or dissects cold-bloodedly the first few years of the Obama administration and its policies. And I think people who are interested in American politics will, you know, find the book of some interest.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the who he's appointed in to the Reserve Bank, for example, it's exactly the same people, and the same people that oversaw the global financial crisis in the first place. Finally, you've been protesting for quite a long time. You know, you were picked out as an extremist instigator in the British Vietnam war protests. How have protests changed in your eyes? I mean, are Gen Ys lazier, or is it all just a different form of protesting?
Well, no, it's not that people are lazy. It's the fact that people live in a world, especially in the Western world, by which I include New Zealand and Australia, because that's how they regard themselves, that people feel whatever we do, nothing changes. I mean, there were huge protests. The largest protests in the history of humanity came when citizens tried to stop the war in Iraq. Millions and millions of people demonstrated in Europe and North America. Nothing changed, and that depresses people. But then the lesson they should learn from the Middle East is that one demonstration alone is not enough. You have to have a consistent movement that just carries on, and that is the way to stop wars and to change what's going on. I mean, we live in the Western world in democracies, but democracies which, in my opinion, are becoming more and more hollow, where there's no big difference between center-left and center-right, where there's one large blob, which I describe these regimes as essentially a dictatorship of capital.
That was Tom Watts talking with Tariq Ali. Coming up after the break, we talk about dirty smokers and dirty hippies.